end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. I'm joined as ever this week by Lee. How are you doing, Lee?
Yep, doing really well. Excited to be here. And we've got news to talk about.
We have, yeah. We were planning to do a show last week, and it was going to be one that was, we were going to record just the two of us because Andy's still away, right after the breaking news of our new head coach. And of course, it dragged on. And of course, we find ourselves here tonight talking about it.
Yeah, can't wait. I found myself sitting around when it happened on Sunday night with no one to talk to because it was kind of late, and it's like an excited kid at Christmas, but with no one to talk to. It's a bit sad, really.
So this show, Lee, is going to be all about the good, the bad, and the ugly. That is going to be the theme for tonight's show. So we're going to start off by talking about the good, of course, and that is the appointment of Mike McDaniel as our new head coach. He graduated from Yale, and his coaching resume has been quite impressive since then. Obviously, moving up to be the 49ers offensive coordinator. Interestingly, he's the fourth assistant coach from the 2013 Washington football team under Mike Shanahan that's become a head coach after Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, and Sean McVay. So he's coming from a good background, a good coaching tree. Just to throw some stats out there from the 49ers offense in 2021, they were first in yards per play and first in net yards per pass attempt. So those sorts of rankings can only bode well for the Dolphins. And of course, he's come with various good endorsements already since his appointment. Robert Saleh of the Jets, Kyle Shanahan, of course. Gary Kubiak, who he's coached with before, they've all endorsed him really in a really positive manner. So on the face of it, it seems like a really good coaching appointment, Lee.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's going to be people out there sitting right now but that aren't happy because he wasn't the guy they wanted. And I just think when it comes to the coaches, it's like we're educated guessing because you're either hiring a guy who's been in the league before and they're usually out of the league because they failed somewhere, and you're taking a second chance on them and hoping they improve, or you're taking a first-time head coach like we have and you're hoping that he's good. He's never done this job before, so there's no sort of hard data on it. It's an educated guess. So like let's be excited about it and see what happens and kind of treat it for what it is. And when the results start to come and the play starts to come, the draft and free agency stuff, then we can start to assess what kind of coach he is and what he wants to do. And, you know, not just say, oh, he's going to do everything that San Francisco do.
Let's give a nod to Kellen Moore, though, who, according to reports, ran Mike McDaniel close for the role. By all accounts, he gave an impressive presentation on the Saturday. The fact that it was a close-run thing, I think ultimately Kellen Moore will find himself in a head coaching role eventually. It's just obviously not going to be the Dolphins or anyone else this season. So he'll be definitely a name to watch out in the future. We obviously elected not to pursue Brian Daboll, who went to the Giants. It seems as though Mike McDaniel was their guy all along because there wasn't this mad panic or uproar when Daboll was appointed by the Giants. Vance Joseph never really materialized again, and we all thought he was going to be the safe backup option if for whatever reason they didn't land McDaniel or Daboll. But as I said, by all accounts, they've got the right guy for the job.
Yeah, I imagine Vance Joseph was always that sort of break in case of emergency option. Obviously gets on with Chris Greer well, knows the team and the owner and stuff. So, like you say, a really safe bet. But, yeah, it seems like they got their guy. We said a couple of weeks ago, look, the only reason you would have been waiting to do those second interviews is because the guy you wanted was still coaching and the only person left on that list was Mike McDaniel. So, it's made sense for a while that he was their kind of main target.
He's already made a positive impression, hasn't he? I don't know whether you got you've seen the tweets that the Dolphins are putting out since he stepped onto the plane, and in particular that conversation he had with Tua, acknowledging that he wants to get the greatness out of Tua, and he, and the key phrase that I picked up on there was that he's already making him feel wanted. Something that whilst Tua said he does not feel wanted, the coach is already making him feel wanted. And that's exactly the sort of thing that you want to hear from a new head coach, giving that support even before he'd, even before he'd signed the paperwork.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. He seems like that 1 minute conversation or whatever it was that they put out on Twitter is probably the most positive stuff we've heard about Tua from the organization itself since he was drafted. So, I mean, look, maybe it's nonsense, but I think that Tua has the tools to be a great quarterback for what McDaniel wants to do, because, you know, we've said it on here before, one thing he excels at is accuracy. And we know that there were some struggles under the last regime. And I think probably the most important part that McDaniel brings to this is, by all accounts, he's a great teacher. And I think if Tua understands, Tua can excel. And I think McDaniel's going to be a much better at kind of getting his point across and his game plan and stuff. I don't know. It feels like a positive move in every way right now. But, I mean, obviously, it should do.
Whole conversation was about his communication, his man management, his leadership. They were all on display in that 60-second clip. And yes. I know one of our followers, James Vernon, who has listened to the show, queried whether it was a bit too sort of creepy or sensitive to broadcasts on Twitter. And I said, look, that's exactly what the fan base need to hear immediately, because if you can see that from your head coach right from the very start, it can only have a positive impact on the fan base.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, he gave the okay for it to go out as well. Like, he knew he was being filmed. It didn't go out live. It, you know, he would have given his blessing. Sensitive information would have been taken out of that phone call. Like, it was kind of, you know, it was all great, but you weren't hearing anything you shouldn't hear. So I think it's a great impression. And also, let's be honest, after some of the negative stuff from last week, the Dolphins and their PR team, they need to buy some goodwill with people, and this is a good way to go about that. If they hadn't done it, none of us would have thought anything of it. But doing it kind of means a lot. It means a lot to the fan base. I think it probably shows that Tua is at least the guy for now, like we kind of suspected, you know, from the start of this process, that one of the factors that played into the change of head coach was trying to get the best out of the quarterback.
I find it interesting that repeatedly Brian Flores was asked about the quarterback, and all it was Tua's our quarterback, Tua's our quarterback, and he never went into any more detail. And we've already heard more, like you said earlier, from Mike McDaniel in those 60 seconds than we did from Brian Flores throughout his tenure when Tua was around.
It feels like we're going to get a lot more openness from the head coach, and that he still knows he's the smartest guy in the room. That's not the point, but he's not afraid to share information that isn't going to hurt his team on a Sunday. Like, you know, they're not going to tell you everything, but there's also a lot of stuff that he can say. You know, you don't have to just give the standard answer that we all know that could be programmed into a Madden game. Do you know what I mean? Where it's just rinse and repeat every week. That's fine. But also, you say it enough times, no one really believes you anymore. Like, no one believed Brian Flores every time he said Tua was our QB. It was always, well, how did he say it? What was the situation that just happened? Do you know what I mean? There was so much more. Whereas today, I think you got the impression that McDaniel was genuinely excited to A, talk to Tua, B, be the coach of the Dolphins. And that's great.
We'll wait to see what staff he brings in. Of course, those positions have yet to be announced. But one thing is clear, it does appear as though there's going to be a change in philosophy, certainly on the offensive side of the ball, if not the defence, because there's been obviously talk that they'll leave that side of the ball alone. But certainly from an offensive point of view, there's going to be a lot more emphasis on that side of the game now, particularly with his background being a run specialist. He's demonstrated how successful he can be with the 49ers and the way they run the ball, especially. How do you think that's going to impact the Dolphins' lead? Do you see them having a brand new running back core now the shackles of Brian Flores and his lack of respect to running backs has been taken away? Or do you see them making use of what they've currently got, bearing in mind how easy it was for them in San Francisco to utilize any running back?
I think we're probably going to see more in regards to improvements in the offensive line. Because I think if you watch a lot of what San Francisco did, a lot of it is made by pulling guards. A lot of it is made by moving those guys around and their versatility. I think that's just as important. I think it's really important as well that we don't get too trapped into he's going to do exactly what he did in San Francisco, because that was also Mike Shanahan's team. I'm sure he's got some things that he would like to do differently to that, because that's the evolution of working. Do you know what I mean? You have to do what your boss wants you to do in the first place. And I'm sure they're open to ideas and collaboration, but there'll also be some stuff where Shanahan's like, no, this is the way I want to do it rather than that way. And now he's going to be able to exercise those sort of brain muscles and really play with everything. But yeah, I mean, it's really exciting. It's the Deebo Samuel one is the comparison that keeps cropping up and is the interesting one. Like, it's really easy to point at it, but it's also not easy to go and get a Deebo Samuel. Like, you know, and there's different ways to go about that.
We've maybe got one already. Lynn Bowden obviously was put on IR for a hamstring injury right at the beginning of the season, so he missed out on the year totally. He's going to be back next season. Do you think he's going to be one that could potentially thrive in an offense, or do you see somebody like Salvon Ahmed, who came to the Dolphins from San Francisco, who already knows the scheme? You would have thought. Do you think he's going to benefit as well, or can you see them both thriving?
I'd like to think that as many players as possible are going to thrive, and that's kind of the point, is to train these players and coach them and bring them on. We haven't seen a lot of progress from certain players, and I think, you know, there's opportunities to get that out of them. You know, if you can project Lynn Bowden as a sort of Deebo Samuel type, he might rather run that with a running back. Do you know what I mean? He might think, actually, if I can get a back with good hands, then maybe I can make that a more hybrid. Rather than turning a wide receiver into a running back, maybe I can go the other way and make a bigger bodied guy. You know, I don't know. I just think, you know, it's worked great with Deebo Samuel now, but it doesn't mean it's the only way to fulfill that role. You know, and hey, I think it's really exciting.
I saw a clip on line the other day where somebody was interviewing Deebo Samuel, and he was self-proclaimed wide back, I think was the term he used. So it's an interesting position that if anybody's going to make use of, it's going to be Mike McDaniel and his scheme, isn't it?
Yeah, I think hopefully he's going to get the most versatility out of the most players possible. So, you know, really is exciting times.
I mean, as I said earlier, he's not talked about what staff he's going to retain or bring on board. But have you got any thoughts, Lee, on what he's likely to do? Any particular names that you can think of that might be coming with him?
Not necessarily, not anything different to what, you know, what most people would have already seen online, but I would like him to follow in the footsteps of, why can't I think of the guy's name? The head coach of the Packers, LaFleur, and Sean McVay, by hiring an experienced defensive coach. If he doesn't stick with the guys he's got, I wouldn't mind seeing an old head, possibly even an ex-coach there, an ex-head coach. It makes a lot of sense. Also, it takes the burden off, and it, you know, can a little bit off his shoulders, where he's got someone to bounce stuff off. You know, it's okay promoting people, and it's okay having people who are kind of like serial head defensive coordinators, but someone with that experience could be priceless. I really think that going back to the Hard Knocks series, when Sean McVay took over from Jeff Fisher in with the Rams, that first move of hiring, and now his name's escaped my brain,
Wade Phillips.
I think it, you know, is probably the most important move that he made for his career, because Wade Phillips has been there and done that. Okay, they parted ways a few years later, but I would imagine that to help settle in and to help get going, and you know, you'd have someone there to kind of point out, all right, don't make these mistakes that I made. You know, you're heading down a road where we've all been as rookie head coaches. I think it's just invaluable. So I'd like to see him do that. If he retains the current coach, defensive coaching staff, I also understand that. Like, that's not, I don't see it necessarily as a negative, but I think if you're going to go your own way, bring in an experienced guy. I know, you know, Vic Fangio has been bandied around online. It seems to be a fairly popular one. It makes sense. You know, at least he's been in the position. He's felt the pressures that McDaniel is going to feel for the first time by being the guy.
I don't want to harp on about Brian Flores, but one of the failures he had potentially was that he was placing too much emphasis on the defensive side of the ball and didn't really concentrate on the offense as he should, and didn't even really, it appeared, on delegate like McVay did with the Rams and Phillips and what McDaniel could do with Fangio or whoever. Brian Flores didn't do that, did he? And the team suffered as a result, I think.
That's it. I think that's kind of where it falls apart. And the same with Adam Gase. He was so focused on one side of the ball. That's absolutely fine if you've got an experienced head that you can kind of almost set and forget a little bit on the other side of the ball. You know, in those early years, I think it's, say, really important to have that that support.
What would you consider then, Lee, as a success for his first season? There's not a lot that needs fixing on the defense. We know that. The offense is a slightly different story in that position-wise, they need O-linemen, or do they?
That's another conversation.
Hmm. So what would you deem a success?
I think they have to win more games than last year. I don't think anything's changed. Like, we've not gone into some sort of rebuild. If we think this team has underperformed last year, which is part of the problem, yeah, I know. You know, they'd played into Brian Flores being let go. It was a 7-game losing streak. We think this team is better. We know this team's got talent. We also know that young coaches in the NFL can win. You know, Matt LaFleur took the Packers to the playoffs. You know, plenty of teams are able to do these things. Sorry, that's the bar that I'm setting for Mike McDaniel is kind of where I would have been had Brian Flores still been the head coach, because I expect him to be an upgrade, not a downgrade.
Exciting times. I think we can all look forward to him getting started, seeing what his backroom staff's going to look like. Just want to touch on briefly the clips, again, the Dolphins have been sharing, and that when they showed him the clip of him going into his office, you can't help but feel he was impressed and wanted as well, because they had his nameplate on the door. They had that photograph of his family that was only taken a few hours previously in another location, sat in a frame on his desk. So you know that the Dolphins are acting in a classy way there already with their new head coach, and that bodes well for a strong relationship also.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe he uttered the words, it's the most impressive facility that he'd been in. And, you know, that's a testament to, you know, for all the negative stuff there have been around Steve Ross and you know, the Dolphins, this is not one of those things. Like, he's pumped a lot of money in there. He's done a lot of good things as well, including that training facility, which looks absolutely stunning. I was, you know, near there last year, and just no expense has been spared. I think you can see that, and it's nice that he appreciates it. As a Dolphins fan, as I say, I can't tell you that you've got to like McDaniel. I can't tell you that he's going to be good, because, like I say, I think it's educated guesswork on any coach. But, man, he seems to get you excited. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of like an infectious excitement about him, and I think that's great. Like, we should be in for, look, it's going to be entertaining regardless of what happens, because I think, you know, he's far more open, he likes to play with the media as well, you know, likes to be more open for the fan base. I think, look, that's the polar opposite of what we've just had, and I think it's got me excited. Whether that means the results are going to be there, who knows, but at this stage we'll worry about that in September. Let's enjoy having a new person in charge and a change of atmosphere.
I mean, certainly good times. And I mentioned this was going to be a pod focused around the good, the bad, and the ugly, Lee. That's the good. The bad, of course, we have to talk about the Brian Flores lawsuit because we didn't touch on it last time we recorded because the story hadn't broken yet. Now, we're not going to touch on the wider issues of that lawsuit with regards to race. We're only going to focus on sort of the concentrate on the Dolphins issues that were brought up, where Flores alluded to Stephen Ross offering him $100,000 per loss in the season they tanked. There was also the alleged visit by a quarterback to Stephen Ross's yacht where Brian Flores happened to be in attendance, or was it the other way around? And then there's, of course, there's the reference to Ross mentioning to Flores that maybe he should take a vacation as well. So pretty serious and damning allegations if proven to be true. That's what I think we should concentrate on, the implications from a Dolphins perspective. Lee, what were your initial thoughts when you heard and read about those?
I know I am well in the minority here, so I want to tread kind of lightly. And I know Andy's going to be absolutely screaming at me when he hears this, but I wasn't as upset as most people. Like, if I was a season ticket holder, maybe I'd be more upset. But let's be honest, I don't understand why people are more shocked now. We knew they were trying to tank, so we're upset they tried to pay to tank. Is that worse than knowing that we were doing it anyway? I mean, we traded away the best player on the roster on the eve of the week of the start of the season. You know, I don't see it as particularly shocking that it happens. Do I think that billionaires who own NFL teams are probably sometimes on shaky moral ground? They're billionaires. I kind of expect it, unfortunately. Just that maybe that's my own kind of jadedness about it. But hey, that's kind of how I feel. And also, I don't know how, you know, people keep saying if it gets proved to be true that he offered him money to tank, then he's going to be forced to sell the team. I might be wrong, but my opinion of it is I just don't think that's going to be the case, because unless Brian Flores is saying he took the money to tank, then all Stephen Ross did, in my mind, was fail to cheat. And I don't know if you can be punished for failing to cheat. Now, I say it makes him morally questionable for absolutely for sure. And that's not something that people want, but unless someone actually did something wrong, and even offering the money, it's wrong. But unless you took it, he didn't actually cheat. He just tried to. So you can have proof that he offered it to you, but unless it happened, I just think the NFL will probably push this aside a little bit and it'll be kind of forgotten.
Yeah, but aren't there some morals that need to be adhered to with regards to a team owner? If you see team owners behaving like that in public, that's not what you want to see, surely. Excuse me, on that basis, surely something does need to be done about it if they're proven to be true.
I mean, possibly. I mean, what was the Patriots fine for being caught cheating by videotaping another team? A $500,000 fine and a first-round draft pick. Wasn't forced to sell the team. Wasn't really that bad. They went to the Super Bowl that year. Like, the punishment for the crime was fairly minimal, and we're actually saying he didn't commit a crime. He just tried to. So it's a bad look. But I mean, look, if you give him a fine, do we think a fine is A, going to stop him from doing it again, or B, actually hurt him in any way? Probably not. So I don't know. I just think it's shocking when you hear it, but is that any worse than, I say, actually knowing they were tanking? Like, we saw them do it. We saw them trade players. We saw them rob the roster of talent. And we were all okay with it. And that was fine because that was the plan. But now we hear that he actually wanted to lose. It's shocking. I don't think that, for me, really changes things an awful lot.
As Andy would say, Lee, you speak far too much sense.
You know, I could be completely wrong and he could be forced to sell the team. I just don't, you know, the NFL doesn't have a history of punishing cheaters that harshly. And like I say, when it really comes down to it, I don't think he actually managed to cheat. He managed to fail at that. So if you want to say that he's a terrible person, yes. Did he he even failed at trying to cheat, which is kind of bad in itself, but hey.
What about the rumoured quarterback that was supposed to attend his yacht? Reports are out there saying it was Tom Brady. Is that a form of tampering? And bearing in mind, it's all allegedly, Tom. Yeah, no concrete evidence. Is that a more serious offence than offering a bribe in inverted commas?
I don't know if it's worse. I think it's still bad because you're circumventing the rules. Like, you know, you're supposed to play by the rules like everybody else is. But I don't think billionaires are used to playing by the rules. So you kind of expect this behavior. Like, it won't be the first time it happens. It won't be the last time, like, someone gets in trouble for tampering, for sure. Again, Brian Flores said he left before the supposed quarterback turned up. So, like, it's if it happened, fine. If you can prove it, then give him the fine, take a draft pick, give him punishment. But I don't think it's groundbreaking, that's all.
No, I mean, these things probably happen all the time, don't
also,
they?
Why it's in my mind, it also flies kind of in the face of, so you're offering me $100,000 to lose, but you want Tom Brady. And, like, he wasn't bringing Tom Brady in to lose. So, I don't know. You know, they kind of conflict a little bit. And where these things get messy, that's when things start to fade away. You know, I was talking on a podcast last night with a great good friend of mine, Murph, who we were talking about all the controversies in the NFL. And we were saying, you know, all the controversies around the Washington football team, but they kind of just drift off into the distance. You know, they were accused of really bad things, you know, in regards to their behavior and sexism as a culture. And all Dan Snyder had to do was pay a fine and transfer the his operations duties to his wife. Like, it's kind of a slap on the wrist. It's not really, you know, which is wrong, but that's what the NFL has the history of doing.
You think there's an element of sour grapes from Brian Flores to make that information public, whether it's made up or not? Because I don't think those two scenarios were the cause of Brian Flores losing his job, as he alluded to in that lawsuit. Do you think it's a case of sour grapes?
Yeah, if he'd been that mad that you were winning games, he would have fired you after the first season when the Dolphins had lost enough games where you could say, this guy's not a very good coach. You know, a bit like the Texans have done, let's be honest. They fired a coach after he outperformed his roster last year. That's what Brian Flores did in his first year, but they still let him go. They didn't do that. Brian Flores was the coach for another 2 years. You don't want to get too deep in it, but it's just, if you were that morally outraged by it when it was happening, why did you wait 3 years to say anything? Because these were things that were going to derail your team that you were a head coach of and ultimately affect your long-term prospects because you were the head coach of that team. So, I don't know. It's messy. Of course, you're going to be upset that you're fired, but we all know that if you can believe anything that Stephen Ross was saying in his presser, that, you know, the main reason that he let Brian Flores go was communication problems, which we had heard before he was fired, and you know it wasn't to do with winning. So, I don't know. It just doesn't feel to me like that's the case. And as for just going back to the tank for a minute, like, I think the other thing the NFL have got to be well aware of is, A, the Dolphins not the first team to tank. So whether they paid for it or not is an issue. But you can't be outraged by the tank because the NFL basically encouraged teams to do it by giving the worst team in the NFL the first pick in the NFL draft. Because halfway through the season, there's a bunch of teams that are already have no chance of going to the playoffs. So at that point, it is in their interest to lose games. Now, if you say it out loud or pretend that it's a real thing, it's the case that you are better off losing games because the higher pick is worth more to you. And that's the system that the NFL have put in place. So, you know, you can't be surprised that this happens and that people try to manipulate it in their favor. If you were to implement an NBA style system where the worst 10 teams in the NBA go into a lottery for that first pick, then things change slightly because it's not in your interest to lose games. But at this stage, you know, you come to the end of the season, you know, the Lions haven't got a pick, haven't got the number one overall pick because they decided to win a game. But most people probably think they should have lost that game because the number one pick would have been better.
You mentioned earlier about long-term prospects. And when this news broke of the lawsuit, I put in our group chat, I wondered if this makes Brian Flores unemployable. And sure enough, all the head coaching positions have now been filled. And Brian Flores was not one of the ones that got a job. So he's still out of work. He did reportedly come close to getting the Texans job. But interestingly, his lawyers put out a statement last night, or I think it was last night, alluding to the fact that the only reason he didn't get the job was because of this lawsuit. Now, on the one hand, you can say he's digging himself a grave with this, so you can understand why teams are being scared away by the lawsuit. On the other hand, you can understand the text messages from Bill Belichick seem to indicate that he knew already that Daboll was going to offer that Giants job. And if it was true, he went into that interview with the Giants already having Daboll in mind, then you do need to feel a little bit of compassion for him having been put in that embarrassing situation. I mean, we may never know. So you've got to empathise from both sides, I think. But I do think Brian Flores has made it extremely difficult for himself now to get another job in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves to be a coach in the NFL. He's a good coach. But like he made mistakes in Miami. That's why he's not got a job there. That's fine. But he knew when he brought the lawsuit that the likelihood was that was going to stop him from getting a job. And that's, you know, let's be honest, if a team had hired him, whether it'd been the Giants, the Texans, we know that when the lawsuit came out, he actually tried to go on TV a week before with it, you know, when it was ready to be filed. If he'd got a job, would there have been a single question in the initial press conference for him being announced as a head coach that wasn't about the lawsuit? It was about him as a coach or the team that he was hired for. Like, that's just not the case. It's not the way the NFL works. It's not the way most sports work. Every question would have been, everything would have been dominated by the lawsuit until it was settled. And the lawsuit isn't going to be settled quickly. You know, there's a lot there. The interesting stuff about the Giants job, I'd love to know who in the Giants is telling Bill Belichick stuff first. That seems like a bizarre situation that needs to be looked into in itself. But, you know, if that's the case, then yeah, I mean, that's completely wrong. You know, you shouldn't bring someone in for a job, you know, regardless of colour. That's just not right if you've already hired someone. But again, you know, the NFL needs to investigate and they need to get it right. But yeah, I think, you know, Brian Flores has kind of made himself a bit of a poison pill for teams right now, because I say this story is going to dominate anything he does rather than his coaching skills, which is wrong, because let's be honest, his defense in Miami is absolutely stellar. Like, we loved it. Had he been the coach right now, the Miami Dolphins, no, I'd be complaining. So
interesting to know whether he would have brought that lawsuit regardless, because the thing that struck me was that it came out literally a handful of days after he got fired. And did you see the length of that report, where it was, 50 plus pages? So you're telling me all of that was written from the point he was fired up until the date it was publicised? It would have taken a hell of a lot of amount of work to have got all of that detail, not only to get it off Brian Flores himself, but also to write it down and get it into a document and then publish it with wherever it needed to be published or filed. All of that was done in a very small space of time. So I did wonder whether this was something that was bubbling in the background anyway, if Flores thought that he was going to get fired before he actually did.
Yeah, certainly. It's a really interesting, let's say the whole thing is really interesting. And what Brian Flores is standing up for is absolutely 100% right, because hiring practices anywhere should be fair. Like, equality is important. That's the way, you know, the world should be. But, you know, he can't honestly sit there and say that he's surprised that that the lawsuit is going to stop him from getting a job. He might be disappointed, but he can't be surprised, because I think we kind of all expect that to be the case.
Interesting times being a Dolphins fan, isn't it, Lee? It's never dull.
It's always fun, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's always fun. I was also interested to see that all came out on the same day that Tom Brady retired, even though there was the weird kind of almost retiring on the Saturday before it came out. And it's like, I wonder if he's trying to avoid the controversy of him being the quarterback that was going to be on the boat. Because let's be honest, Tom Brady's been a part of enough controversies himself as well. For all the great stuff, there's been some controversy in his career as well. So I don't know. Timing was interesting.
Yeah, you didn't buy it. You and Andy didn't buy it when I put on the group chat that if Tom Brady was the quarterback and it was tampering, would that be Tampa Gate?
I did laugh. I was sitting at my desk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, another interesting storyline that's going to obviously drag on, and we can follow that with interest. So we've done the good, Lee. We've done the bad. We're now going to get onto the ugly, and it's Super Bowl week. And the reason I'm saying this is ugly is that it's just demonstrated how much of an ugly job the Dolphins did at tanking. If you look at where the Bengals are now, because they were even worse than the Dolphins in that season, and they've turned it around in 2 years. They're now in the Super Bowl, and the Dolphins are realistically only a little bit further forward in terms of their progression. They couldn't make the playoffs, but the Bengals did, and they're in the Super Bowl. So it's an ugly situation in terms of the way the Dolphins tanked. So there's your tenuous link to the ugly part of the good, the bad, and the ugly. But it is Super Bowl week, so we ought to, excuse me, again, and we ought to do a little bit of a preview. Rams, Bengals. I liken it very much to the Rams are the equivalent of Manchester City in the Premier League, in that they buy their way to success. So they've got no young draft picks. They trade them all away to buy themselves a Matt Stafford, a Von Miller, against a Bengals team who are young and up and coming and have made use of those draft picks. And in that sort of situation, you never, in this country, you never like to follow the, you always like to support the underdog, don't you, against the big teams. Manchester City probably don't get many neutrals supporting them in their cup finals, and I wonder if the same will be considered for the Rams. I mean, I'm certainly hoping the Bengals win, but I've got a feeling the Rams will. What are your thoughts on the matchup, Lee?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said. With the one exception being, I actually would root for the Rams in this, because I kind of feel for Matt Stafford. For all the great play he's had in his career, I think he deserves, not necessarily to win a Super Bowl, but he's deserved this run, and he's deserved to be on a good team for all the, you know, really bad teams that have been put around him. But it just goes to show, you know, when people start complaining when teams want to spend in free agency or they want to collect draft picks, you can do it either way, and they'll both get you to the same place. There's ways to go about it. To be honest, don't be surprised if Steve Ross kind of reverts back to type and wants to spend money and bring in big names, because the Rams are proving that that's a way to do it. Tampa Bay proved that's a way to do it. You know, they've got some young pieces on defense, but let's be honest, it revolves around the older talent that they brought in. You know, the Ndamukong Suhs, JPPs, Brady, Gronk, Mike Evans, Leonard Fournette, he's not a rookie. Do you know what I mean? Bringing in a Gio Bernard and stuff like that. This, you know, that's one way to go about it. And I think Ross prefers those kind of headline making moves in free agency and stuff like that. So don't be surprised if we kind of revert back to that type.
They've got the money. They've got the cap space, and the money's there to effectively spend. So spend it.
And to say there's no right or wrong way to do it, because you've got a team doing it either way in the Super Bowl. So
it would be good for Matt Stafford to win one, because he's had it bad for so long in Detroit that, and he's been such a great player in the NFL. Then if anyone out of the two teams deserves a Super Bowl win, it is him. Von Miller's already got one with the Broncos, of course. And I didn't mention Odell Beckham, who also became part of that Rams team. Now, he's not one that you would say has had an outstanding career to date, because it's been blighted by injuries. But he was never going to get one at the Browns, nor was he going to get one at the Giants. For instance, at the Giants, so it's an opportunity for him to grab that ring as well.
Definitely, I think it's exciting. It'd certainly be interesting if the Rams did win, because that'd be two teams in consecutive years to win home Super Bowls after, you know, it never being done, which, you know, is kind of interesting in itself. But to be honest, as a neutral, just hope for a great game. That's the more important thing. Is I think I just want to see a great game of football.
From a Bengals perspective, they've had an outstanding season. They've got a really young offensive team with Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd. They've got an outstanding offense. They're very young, so they're going to have plenty of opportunities in future, you would have thought, to make some noise in the playoffs. Do you think it's come too early, considering Chase is in his rookie year, Burrow's in his second year, albeit his first year he missed a lot of because of injury? Do you think the occasion will get the better of them, bearing in mind they're in the in the Rams stadium? Or do you think they'll play with no fear and they've got nothing to lose?
I don't think they've got... I would hope they'd play with no fear, having played in the national championship game, playing their playoff games like a couple on the road. I know they had the one home game in the start of the playoffs, but I don't know. I mean, I see a lot of people saying, oh, don't worry, if they don't win, they'll be in the Super Bowl again soon. I don't know that it's that simple. You know, they also had the benefit of, like you say, having been a bad team for a number of years, that they were playing consummately bad teams from other divisions. So that schedule is going to be a lot harder next year as a division winner. You know, they're going to be playing a lot more division winners from this year, who are going to be teams, a lot of those will be ascending teams. You know, it's not... I think Tampa found a little bit as well. You get every team's best shot when you get deep in the playoffs or you get to a Super Bowl. Whereas when Tampa were trying to figure it out the year before and it wasn't always pretty, but they managed to kind of figure it out and get on a roll going to the playoffs, you got to remember their schedule was based on being the worst team in a division the year before. You know, there's a lot of similarities to that. And I don't think it necessarily guarantees that you're going to be there all the time going forward. It's exciting and they certainly could be, but... You know, it's like people keep saying, how many Super Bowls is Patrick Mahomes going to win? He's not in it this year. Like, didn't win it last year. Like, it's not as simple as that. Going to the Super Bowl doesn't guarantee more trips to the Super Bowl, as unfortunately Dan Marino knows. Like, that, you know, that's probably the proof is in that. Like, it doesn't matter how great you are. There's so much more to it than that. Like, let's enjoy it while it is, but you know, I think as the NFL and the media especially will pump down our throats for the entire offseason that these teams are great, thus they must be great next year because they were great this year. And we know that is not how it works.
Right. So how do you see the game going? And let's have a final prediction from you, Lee, before I share mine with you.
So I said, I'm going to stick with what I said yesterday, and I think 28-21 Rams. I just hope that there's a little bit of scoring, some good defense, but close enough to be interesting. I don't want to blow out. I don't like blowouts in Super Bowls. I think it robs us of a great game. Let's be honest. Everyone loved the Chiefs and Bills game 2 weeks ago because it was great football. And as a neutral, you can appreciate great football. So let's have more of that.
I think the last three Super Bowls, this was a stat that was put out by Gridiron Magazine. The last three Super Bowls have all, the total number of points has always fallen under the expected total. I think it was around the 55 point mark, and the last three have all fallen below that. The expected over under this year is, I read somewhere, was 47. So if history is to repeat itself, this is going to be a relatively low scoring game with two evenly matched teams. But I'm going to go with you as well, Lee. I think the Rams will probably just have a little bit too much experience on the day for the Bengals. And I'm going to go for a narrow 24-20 win for the Rams.
Awesome. I mean, I'd be happy to see Matt Stafford to try running. You know, I was excited when he got traded to the Rams because I was like, yeah, now we're going to see Matt Stafford, you know, when the team's built around him to win. He just feels so robbed every year. Like, you'd see Matt Stafford play a couple of times on the Lions team and think, this guy is really good and fun to watch, but this team is so bad. It just feels like he deserves to be out of there and get the success that comes with it.
Talking of Super Bowl Sunday, Dolphin UK are going to be making an announcement on Sunday as it's Super Bowl day. So keep an eye out for that announcement that will be coming out across to members in their inboxes, plus throughout our social media outlets. So keep an eye out for a very special announcement from Dolphin UK. Lee, any final thoughts before we call it a night? And we can all look forward to Andy returning the next time we record from his very much delayed honeymoon. I hope he's had a good time out in Florida. He didn't get the job, unfortunately, or is he still hoping for one of his assistants? Do you think?
Maybe he's hoping to be a coordinator. Maybe he's going to be in charge of the offense from now on. It'd just be Duke Johnson over and over and over.
if he signs, he hasn't even signed yet.
That's it. If he signs, so be excited to have Andy back, of course. And hey, I mean, look, this should be an exciting week as we find out more about the staff that's being put together. It means we can start to project free agency and the draft and schemes and what this team's going to look like. Like Mike McDaniel's the first piece, but there's so much more to come. I think his presser should be really quite entertaining, I think. So let's look forward to that and hope that it actually happens as they keep kind of moving the schedule around.
Absolutely. On that note, guys, thanks for listening as always. And we'll talk to you again very soon.